to my next guest, the one and only Morris Misolowski. How are you?
Great, Phil. How are you?
Not bad at all. Usually Morris and I have a little session in the morning where what are we going to talk about, blah, blah, blah. Well, this week you give me a whole load, so it's keynote-tastic, I guess, for you.
Yeah, pretty much. But it all comes out of one guy's activity last week.
Oh, yeah.
There was a guy in Sydney that decided that he didn't like to carry his Opal card, which is the equivalent of an octopus card. It's used for public transport, and you use it to tap on and off. He decided that carrying that bit of plastic was far too much effort for him and that he would implant it into his arm instead so that he would never lose it.
Fair enough.
Look, there's been a really interesting conversation. Well, he's not, but it's a really interesting conversation going backwards and forwards. You know, first of all, I applaud him, because he obviously travels a lot by public transport. He's doing his bit for the ecology, so more power him. Now, you've got to ask him what his name is, because it's wonderful.
Go on.
Now, this is his registered name, his legal name. His name is Meow Ludo Disco Gamma Meow Meow.
Fair play. Meow Meow. It sounds like he's had a bit too much meow meow, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, that kind of tells you everything I'm about to say about him.
Go on.
So he decided that he was going to implant this Opal chip into his arm, and he did, and he can now get on and off public transport without having to have his plastic card, merely by tapping his arm. What I find joyous about this whole thing is that the transport department in New South Wales is not happy with what he did, and they have suggested that that is not something that people should be doing, because in fact they're damaging their Opal card, and they also threatened to deactivate the card, which they did. But the problem was that the card they deactivated was the one that he doesn't use, and the one in his arm he purposefully didn't register with them, so they can't have access to it.
Ooh.
So there's this whole stoush going on backwards and forwards about the most nonsensical things, when in fact what they're not doing is talking about the technology. It's just hysterical from my viewpoint.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, we are talking about a bit of surgery here, so, you know, what did he sort of nip round the back of the bike sheds and get his friend to do it? What happened?
Yeah, what he's done is actually not new. This has been going on for decades, and it's usually done in tattoo parlours.
Ah,
so right. there are lots of people that have piercings put into their body, that have things implanted into their body that gives them a particular look, and it's done by tattoo artists. So getting it put in is actually not that difficult. What he did technically was, of course, the listeners don't do this at home, because the New South Wales Transport Department will not be happy with you, is that he cut out the little bit, the RFID chip, which is that chip that connects between the card and the reader, put it into a bit of plastic, which is supposedly human-friendly, and then with his local friendly tattoo mate, put it into under his skin. Now, as I said, this has been done for years and years, not just for people who are augmenting their body for whatever reason, they want to put studs or something under their skin, but lots of scientists and boffins have been doing this for decades, implanting these sorts of devices that allow them to interact. The first one that came to a whole lot of attention was about 2 decades ago, a husband and wife scientific team who, they claim, purely for scientific reasons, implanted an RFID, a radio frequency identification chip, under their skin that allowed them to enter and exit their laboratory, to tap into their computer without a password, and to do all sorts of things that you and I really don't have much use for, but in their world was wonderful. And people have been doing that kind of thing for quite a while.
In Hong Kong, when we want to recharge our octopus card, it's called here, you have to give it to the bloke and he goes beep on his machine. I'm assuming that's not the case in Australia.
No, here you can do it online. So you certainly can go to the bloke and he'll go beep on his machine and then put some money in, but you can do it just as easily online. Having, you know, the joke about that, this is Sydney, I live in Melbourne, is that in our Melbourne transport system, we have what I think is the worst system on the planet, and we have spent more than anybody else on the planet to have it.
Mm.
It has cost us billions of dollars, and no government in the last 15 years has been willing to ditch it because of how much money has been spent on it. Every government then spends a couple of $100 million to $500 million trying to make it work. In our system, if I top up online, I cannot use that top up for 24 hours.
Oh, well.
And if I go onto a public transport, if I go onto a bus or a tram, having topped it up online, it will not show on my card and I will be fined for not having any money on it.
Do you know what this reminds me of the 1970s or even earlier? There's a great video on YouTube of a fellow going to the world's first cash machine. and something like he puts his card in. You can find it there. So he puts his card in, then he has to wait, and somehow a little envelope with £10 comes out, and he won't get his card back until the next morning when he goes into the bank to collect it.
Yeah. Do you know, in fact, we had an anniversary last week, I should say, the 50th anniversary of the first ATM in the world. Was last Tuesday.
50.
And it was put into a 50.
Yeah.
It's quite incredible. It was put into a Barclay bank in England.
That's the one,
and
maybe.
It was exactly as you said, that the original one was actually built on, because you and I often talk about where these great ideas come from. Somebody was buying a piece of chocolate out of a vending machine and thought, wouldn't this be a great thing for a bank? And the first bank ATM, which we now call ATM, which they called RoboCash in its first incarnation, was literally, if you were a bank, if you had enough money in your account, you were seen to be well heeled, and they thought you were a great customer, they would give you a handful of tokens, and each token equals £25. And when you put that token into the machine would then give you exactly £25 for it. But it was only for the great. It was not for the unwashed like me.
Well, the reason I bring this up, Maurice, is because it's another almost but not quite. You're talking about not being able to activate a card for 24 hours. It does rather remind me of times gone by.
Yeah, look, we literally fight about this all the time. It's always in our press, has been for the last 20 years. It is really the most awful system. When I talk about it to audiences, I kind of do a parallel because Perth, the other side of the country, bought a system for $9 million about 10 years ago. Mm. They bought it off the shelf. And they tinkered with it for another $2 or $3 million. I think it cost them $12 million, and it works far better than ours. And it's just an incredible waste of money on our side, and it's not getting any better.
What's the flaw from your business head point of view? What's the flaw in this? What's causing that big delay? Is it security?
It's the government. It's the government and the system that they put in. Unfortunately, the system that they put in here does not have lifetime access. Mm. In fact, what happens is when you go on and tap on, it's not until the end of the day or an appropriate time that everything is downloaded into their system. So there's no live action at all in the system. And it is literally a system that needs to be demolished and taken away. I've never heard one of my geek or nerd mates ever try and say that it can be patched. Everybody says it just needs to be ditched. As I said, they've spent over $1 billion, that's with a B, and nobody's willing to do that yet.
That's insane, because the whole nature of the world in which we live is about stuff happening now. And people come, OCD to the power of 10 when it doesn't happen now.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're forever being lambasted about it. Of course, you can go to your man and he will ping and it will become immediately available. But, that's the way it goes. But this biohacking, is a really interesting thing with Mr. Meow Meow, and it over the last week or so, I've talked about the things that we have been putting into our body over the last couple of decades that we now take for granted, which is technology. We're no longer organic, and I use the term that I think we've in fact become homo cyborgs. We've moved away from homo sapien because we're so connected to technology now that our organic body is literally invaded, and we don't quite know it, and I don't think we even want to know it.
Is this by any chance people saying we are so impatient now? Because what he's doing, the model there is your scientists who go into the lab and stuff. What they're really wanting to do is perhaps a retina scan or something funky that involves no props. So they're doing a chop shop version of it on themselves.
Yeah, they are. And in those early days, that's exactly what they were talking about. There is some really interesting work being done. There's some work being done around what's called Neuralink. And that's the ability for us to be able to control technology with our brain. So simply think of something and then a light turns on, a door opens, or some piece of communication happens. Now, for most of the listeners, they'll be saying, look, that'll never work. It's a step too far. But put it into the context of what's being done right now, that there are opportunities for quadriplegic, and there is a horrible disease called locked-in syndrome, where a person's body does not function, but it's obvious their brain does. Now, for those types of people with those infirmities, those issues, they are already able to some degree, to put on what might be seen as a helmet, and those helmets have sensors on it, and through that helmet to be able to control wheelchairs, to open up lights, turn on taps, open doors and do things. So for people that don't have use of their limbs, we're already starting to see the technology come to fruition. It's, of course, a decade or two.
But once again, the helmet sounds like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, it does. But it's wonderful when you see this kind of stuff, Phil. I mean, I've actually seen some people, unfortunately, with that disease. And what they're able to do is to open up a world for themselves of semi-independence. Of course, it's never going to be the world that you and I would want for them, but it's semi-independent, even to be able to turn a light on or to move a wheelchair, to do something for themselves. There's also something else called an exoskeleton, which is something we put on outside of our body, again, meant for quadriplegics, people who have difficulty walking. And this is like a support, it's like a scaffold. So you put it onto your body, and with that and a device, it can literally help you to stand up and to walk. And that's being used for some people, depending on what their level of disability is already, and we're beginning to see more of it. I saw last year a lady in a wheelchair who'd been there for 10 years. It was caused by a motor car accident. It was, again, never believing that she would walk, literally put on an exoskeleton for the first time ever with her physiotherapist. It was actually at our Parliament House in Victoria here.
Yeah.
And we had lots of politicians there. And there was not a dry eye in the house, including mine, as you watched this lady stand for the first time in 10 years and take small steps. So some of this technology is not as weird as it sounds. It has great purpose.
It also is, again, very historical. I mean, the exoskeleton thing, it sounds like those machines that they would have given to kids with polio and stuff in many, many years gone by. But, you know, a super-duper version.
Yeah. And it doesn't look dissimilar. I mean, it really doesn't look dissimilar at all. It is scaffolding around the body. It's also being used, unfortunately. You and I always talk about good and evil. It is already being sold into some armies in the world, including America, who are prototyping, trialing it for soldiers who have greater strength, who are able to walk and run faster.
Yeah, we were going to get to that.
We're already starting to see, as always with these things, there's good and there's evil, and you know where I fall out.
Yeah,
on that,
absolutely. Well, that brings up an interesting point. In terms of military, there are two things, once again, back to the films and TV, there are two things that have always been everybody's favourite. One is, like, basically the Iron Man, and the second one is the Death Ray.
Yeah, and we can have both of them. I mean, technically, we could do both of them. Iron Man's really just a jaunt nowadays, given what we already know about technology, exoskeletons and all kinds of bits and pieces that we have. And the Death Ray, you know, as much as we don't want to have it, I don't think it's something we can buy off the shelf, I'm hoping. But if for some horrible reason we put our mind to it, I don't think we're too far away from achieving it.
Well, if you listen to a lot of conspiracists, it's existed for years.
Yeah, but so have aliens.
Yeah, well, exactly. And wouldn't it be funny if they had? I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm loving the stories that are coming out over the last couple of weeks. For some reason, all of the alien stories seem to have converged in the last two or three weeks. Apparently, NASA's been hiding a whole lot of aliens somewhere that we haven't known about.
This is a fascinating thing because we could, I mean, you know, we cannot get into this, right? But this whole notion of existence of supreme beings, religion, et cetera, if one day we were to find out, yes, this is absolutely true beyond any shadow of a doubt, that's great. But boy, oh boy, if we find out one day that none of this exists, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, it does. Look, for me, the major issue is that I believe most of us are looking for creatures that look like us, that somehow have some kind of ability. I believe that there is something out there, but I'm thinking it's microscopic, it's micro, you know, it is something so small and inconsequential, because that would have to exist somewhere in this universe.
The
likelihood of other people doing what we do, I think, is almost nil.
When it comes to the spirituality and religious thing, I mean, it is funny when people always assume that he, she, it, whatever entity looks like them. You know, how many times have we seen the white Jesus from Surbiton? What I mean, with blonde hair.
And that's a really great conversation too. I mean, I'm actually doing a piece on the future of religion for an exhibition I'm going to do in two years' time.
Oh, yeah.
And talk about being a futurist. So I'm beginning to do a lot of work around the future of religion on that. And it is fascinating because many of the images that you and I have in our head of religion come from the Renaissance. They come from artists who dreamed these things up. And yes, it's that white gentleman with a beard who sits on a chair who seems to be this God figure that most of us have in our head that we think of. And when you give evidence, as I've tried to do to some people, that Jesus was more likely to be olive-skinned or dark-skinned, and that goes back to an anthropological, nothing else, just purely anthropology of the time and the majority of people that were living in that time, it seems to be something that many people push against, because no, he wasn't. He was this white Anglo-Saxon person that we all have.
Morris, unless he did come from Surbiton, chances are the fellow was olive-skinned and all of the above.
There's no issue about that. There absolutely isn't. But it goes back to your point before about how dogmatic we are with the images we have in our head, which are things that were man-made anyway, and they were only made a couple of hundred years ago.
The horrible humans bit in this one is, it's all well and good, believe in whatever you like, and then comes one power-hungry Svengali who manipulates the whole thing, and that really takes us back to our conversation about what could go really, really wrong with robots, and that's the area I'd like us to wrap up on. Thoughts on that?
For me, it's always been an issue of extremists. I think extremism is really the issue that we have on this planet at any time, regardless of whether it's religion, water, food, football teams or whatever. It's always the extremists. And robots fall into that place as well, because robots are not anthropomorphic. They don't give birth to themselves. It's humans that give birth to them. And if extremists begin to use the technology for evil, then we end up with an atom bomb.
All right, Morris, listen, tell us the name of that bloke again and point our listeners in the direction where they might want to read about this.
Yeah, so this guy's called Meow Ludo Disco Gamma Meow Meow.
Nice one.
The most wonderful name. I think we should all adopt it.
All right, Morris. Let's talk next week. Lovely to chat with you. Bye-bye for now. That's Morris Mizrahi.